Joining me today on the EG Property Podcast, almost fresh from Knight Frank's London breakfast this morning, is Lee Elliott, who's Global Head of Occupier Research. Lee, how are you doing?
I'm great, Sam. Thanks for having me on the podcast. And slightly freshened by this morning. And looking forward to talking to you about some interesting themes that are shaping in the occupational market.
Absolutely. I thought it was really interesting, actually, the event this morning, because I know sort of here at EG we've sort of changed a little bit the conversation that we're having, and we find ourselves talking a lot more around what not so many years ago would have been sort of labelled as the soft side of property, you know, sort of talking about people and talent and well-being and sustainability. But that definitely felt like it was a strong theme at the breakfast this morning, and a strong theme from a really sort of business imperative perspective. And particularly keen to hear from you the sort of the impact of people on occupier behaviours, and then what that means for the cold hard bricks and mortar of real estate.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, I think the first thing to say is that, you know, one has to think of the occupiers as businesses first and foremost. And, you know, we do have this slight tendency within the property world to get sort of quite myopic and look down the wrong end of the telescope and think the whole world revolves around rents per square foot or total occupational costs. And the reality is that if you actually put yourselves in the shoes of the customer, the occupier, then real estate's only about 15% ever of a cost equation for a business. That's some research the BCO did a couple of years ago that sort of verified that fact. So, you know, actually, in the scheme of things, from the customer standpoint, real estate's 15% of the cost. 55% of the cost is actually people. That's the operating cost of a business, 55%. So what I think the industry is waking up to is that actually that interrelationship of costs between real estate costs and people costs, they're very intertwined and interdependent. And that becomes more of the issue when one thinks about the war for talent that's been raging ever since McKinsey turned the phrase at the turn of the century. You know, we've had this acute war for talent, record levels of employment, acute shortages, particularly of tech and creative skills. And what that means is there's more opportunity for talent to jump from one business to another. And therefore, retention becomes a huge and costly issue for most businesses. Oxford Economics did some research a while back which suggested that it could be up to 100% of someone's salary to replace them. Mm. And if you put that in the context of London real estate, then broadly defined, it's 10 times more expensive for someone to leave an occupier business than it is to accommodate them in a standard workstation.
Implications
of that for real estate, 10 times. Wow. Yeah. So the implications of that for real estate are quite significant, and I think the industry is waking up to the fact that most occupiers now, in fighting this war for talent, actually need a more strategic real estate solution, something that really supports them in their talent management strategy, both in terms of attracting talent into the business and then critically retaining them. And that's why you've had this shift from, as we talked about in our breakfast this morning, a shift from a focus on creating the right environment, sort of physical side of real estate, the bricks and mortar, the space design, and that we're seeing a transition quite rapidly towards focusing on not just the environment, but also the experience. You know, and as you said in your introduction, that's about the hardness of a physical design with the softness of services and experience. And slowly but surely, I think, and I believe with increasing speed, we're going to see that dynamic really transform the way that landlords and tenants engage, and also the sorts of solutions that we're going to see in the market.
Excellent. There's been a lot of chat, and I know you talked about it this morning as well, about that shifting relationship between landlord and tenant. And I guess there might come a time when we don't use those terms as much. I know we're probably using them less than we used to. And this real need for partnership when it comes to a building that works for both the owner of that building and the people that are using it, not just the corporate using it, but everyone who walks in and out of that building.
Well, I think the adversarial nature of that sort of language, landlord and tenant, is changing quite markedly. It is undoubtedly a move towards partnership, and linked to that, in my view, is this shift towards, you know, regarding space as a service. So not real estate just as a physical product, but as a service that's much more closely aligned to the realities of running a modern business. I mean, we've already seen that shift in the quest for flexibility in the market. Average London lease is now under 7 years, according to MSCI Strunt Parker. You know, even 7 years, one would argue, is 2 to 3 times the typical planning horizon of any business. But what we've seen is real estate and the flexibility inherent increasingly within leases, enabling real estate to be much more aligned to the realities of business. And I think that's something that now is changing the landlord-tenant relationship. Essentially, the provider of space now is a service provider, and the service is to align the physical manifestation of a business with the realities of running that business on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
And flexibility is one aspect of that. Experience is another aspect of it. And, you know, it's quite transformational and challenging for many traditional players in the market, I would argue.
Yeah, I was going to say, it probably makes the sort of business of real estate a little bit tougher for a few people. That they've got to, you know, you've got to enter a different mindset. You've got to pick up different skills. You know, it's not about just build it and they will come. You have to continually be in conversation with the occupiers of your buildings.
Again, we spoke about this a little this morning around sort of the increasing customer centricity. I mean, dare I say, the real estate market, a market I've been involved in for 20 years, it's been quite slow in embracing the language of customer. And I think we're now at that turning point where customer is becoming common parlance within the industry. And customer centricity is all important. Much like the talent piece where I talk about the attraction of talent and the retention of talent, that's true also of tenants or customers. You know, I believe the old mantra of location, location, location still rings pretty true within the real estate industry, but increasingly it's about retention, retention, retention. Retention of staff by the occupier and the retention of the customer by the landlord. And the only way that you can really retain a customer is by really truly understanding them. And I think one of the things that we're doing quite heavily at Knight Frank is doing a lot of research actually about prospective tenants on behalf of landlords. So actually they're very equipped with an understanding of their prospective customer, their business needs, their business strategy, and how that may influence their real estate. And the more empathy you can have with that customer, the more that you can talk their language, respond with a real estate solution that's appropriate to where they are as a business, the more chances you have of retaining them. And if you retain them, of course, then you protect income, you protect asset value and asset performance.
So it's a real business imperative to completely understand your tenants' wants and needs, and not just your tenants, but your tenants' employees' wants and needs.
Yeah, it's all about understanding that customer need and that customer preference, and recognizing that they're not static things as well. You know, the realities, again, one of the things we spoke about this morning in the context of the talent pool within London is we're moving towards a multi-generational workforce. That's going to have some real implications for businesses and the type of talent that they attract in. You know, I get a little bit sick to the back teeth, frankly, of talking about millennials. You know, you go into various conferences and various conversations where millennials is the be-all and end-all. The reality for most businesses is they're going to have a multi-generational workforce. If we create product or create businesses that appeal only to millennials, I think we're going to have a massive problem. And, you know, this is going to manifest itself quite clearly, as we stated this morning, in a very different mix of amenities within office buildings or office districts within cities such as London. For example, we believe quite firmly that access to healthcare services and facilities, sort of drop-in surgeries and the like, will become of growing importance in a multi-generational workforce where you have a more aged population that perhaps has need for those services more regularly. similarly, we think that the war for talent is going to change its dynamic a little bit going forward. And actually, one of the battlegrounds that many businesses are going to fight in the near future is the reskilling of their staff on a more frequent basis. That will push occupiers towards locations that have a high degree of educational infrastructure. And it might even lead to occupiers of scale in buildings of scale starting to embrace education as an amenity within the actual building. We've already seen basement spaces, we've seen bleacher spaces around stairwells being used as informal learning areas for many businesses of scale. I think that's a trend that will continue. And we've absolutely seen more and more occupiers coming through our consulting business trying to really understand the student catchment within and around the office building, the university infrastructure that sits around the office building, and the types of talent that that university or universities are producing as a key determinant of their location decision. I mean, it used to be the location decision was pretty much based on cost. I believe now it's on a range of much softer factors, and none more so than the provision and the ability to sustain the level of innovative staff that one needs in a world, a business world that's been rapidly and increasingly transformed by digital technology in particular.
I thought it was quite powerful, your conversation around sort of amenity heavy offices, and you know that this wasn't a cost as it has been thought in years gone by, or a loss of space that you could let. It's about providing for customers. Yeah. So it's not a cost, it's a value.
Yeah, and it's not just, you know, that value conversation is value for the customer and value for the landlord in the ability to retain the customer, because they create an environment and an experience that is accretive in the context of their ability to, the business's ability to maintain an appropriate staffing level. And, you know, we launched a piece of research at Knight Frank a year ago called Your Space, which is all about these trends. And as part of that, I was lucky enough to go down to Australia and look at some of the amazing workplaces that are being created by Lendlease and others down in Australia. And you know, what you find if you go to Commonwealth Bank's building in Darling Harbour, for example, is how they're using things like contemplation rooms, spaces that are very much about providing staff sanctuary from the almost continued bombardment of technology, as being really, really key amenities for supporting their talent pool, both in terms of their overall well-being, but also in their workplace experience as a way of keeping hold of that talent and not losing staff on a regular basis of churn. And that brings tremendous value to the occupier. And what we found is in Australia that those occupiers are quite prepared to pay rent on spaces that traditionally have been seen as a loss of net lettable area and essentially something that the landlord gives away to the tenant. I think that dynamic of what people pay for and what they don't and where they seek value is up for fundamental reason.
Yeah. And although this morning we were talking about the London market, these are universal changes to real estate, aren't they? This is something that landlords and occupiers up in the regions should be thinking about as well, I presume.
Yeah, I mean, I would say these are global trends. I mean, yeah. You referenced, Sam, at the beginning, you know, the stat that 54% of global business is recognizing talent shortages. That comes from a Manpower survey produced earlier this year. And you know, this is a global problem. This ability to attract and retain talent, particularly tech and creative talent, is not unique to London. In fact, London, as we argued this morning, is pretty well blessed in that it has already a rich seam of this talent pool, but we shouldn't be complacent about that talent, because that talent has options around the world. So these are issues that global business and global real estate markets are absolutely facing up to. It transcends beyond London in the context of the UK into the regions as well. If you look at the regional markets, you know, look at a market like Manchester, where I spend a reasonable amount of time, you know, the quality of asset that's being produced in the Manchester market with the sole purpose of increasing the quality of the environment and experience for highly talented staff in that Manchester market, with a huge quantum of people that occupiers can draw upon, is exactly the same trend we're seeing around the world. You know, in the Your Space work that we've been doing over the course of last year, I've again been fortunate enough to go to a number of markets around the world, and this trend is manifest everywhere I go. It's about occupiers recognizing that they have an acute need for specific talent, and that real estate, rather than being just a container in which you put people, is actually something that, if it's designed correctly and managed and curated in the right way, can actually ensure that not only do you attract that talent in, but you get to keep it. And that is the essence of being competitive as a business.
Yeah, and what a great message to put out to real estate professionals as well. You know, I guess the real estate industry has its own talent issue that it needs to deal with. We need to get lots of different people into the sector. We need a different outside view of what the sector's about. And this kind of conversation about what real estate can do is a great way to do that.
I think that's absolutely right. And you know, I could argue and would argue that we've already seen that to some extent in the market with the influx of co-working. And the whole co-working revolution has brought a hospitality mindset and a service mindset very firmly into the office environment. And what we're seeing quite clearly now in the marketplace is conventional landlords recognizing that co-working phenomenon, irrespective of the sort of noise that you get around the WeWork IPO, et cetera, the co-working phenomenon has changed the narrative of real estate. It's made it a service, it's made it much more hospitality driven, which is a skill set that I think the conventional part of the industry has often struggled with. And the only way that's going to be addressed is by the real estate industry opening up that talent pool and bringing in a service culture and a customer care culture far more towards the epicenter of real estate.
So a slightly unfair question to finish on, I suppose, but I'm a journalist, so that is my job.
I would expect it.
given that you know, you've set out how landlords or property needs to think about its customer now, if it gets this this right and keeps evolving, if we move forward another decade in 2030, where do you expect the real estate and the occupier market to be? Do you think we will have got it right?
Well, I think these things always evolve. And, you know, if we look back 10 years at some of the proclamations that were being made by the real estate industry and real estate researchers in particular, some of those were right and some of those were wrong. I think where we'll get to over the course of the next 10 years, directionally, I think the push towards service, experience, amenity as a core element of what a landlord provides in partnership with an occupier or a customer, directionally that's absolutely correct. The extent to which that manifests itself will be dependent on a number of things. It will be dependent on economic circumstance and you know, the economic cycle and where we sit within that. It'll be dependent on whether we have another challenger moment where someone breaks the model, as the co-working providers did, and brings a new way of doing things into play. And of course, it's going to be changed by, as we talked about a lot today, demography and changing attitudes towards the world of work. I mean, for as long as I've been in the industry, 20 years, you know, we've constantly had this debate about the death of the office. I don't think the office will ever die, but I think the office will continually change form and function. And what that means is that the landlords, whether they're conventional landlords or whether they are co-working operators, and increasingly those two, incidentally, will be working more and more in partnership to deliver customer service. But those that react to those changes and can continue to be at the cutting edge of practice, I think are best positioned. Not an easy task, as we alluded to today at the end of our presentation. But I think if you do that, you do get this, as we said today, property with purpose, property that performs, and property that ultimately prevails. And that's got to be good for both landlord and tenant, or landlord and customer.
Absolutely. And what a great tagline to have. And hey, if it was easy, everyone would do it. And if it was easy, it wouldn't really be that much fun, would it?
Well, that's true, and you know, there's a lot of if you do sort of cast your eyes more globally, as I'm privileged enough to do in my role, there's a lot of great examples of best practice out there, and one of our sort of great crusades is to shine a bit of a light on that best practice from around the world to ensure the whole industry moves forward in step, or at least spots the opportunities to actually change the narrative of real estate, continue to enhance the value of real estate, and ultimately to create business service for the occupier, because that's the game we're all in now.
Fantastic. So Lou, it was a great event this morning, and so much in there. I know there was more than just sort of occupier view of things. If people want to have a read through and watch some videos, they head to the Knight Frank Intelligence Lab. That's right, isn't it?
That's right, Knight Frank website, and there's the Intelligence Lab right there in bold on the main website. Lots of articles about all of the things that we've spoken to today, as well as some video content and some interesting things to explore.
So once they've finished reading on EG, they can head over there.
Correct. Absolutely right.
Excellent. Thank you ever so much for joining us on the podcast. I think it's a fascinating discussion. I think it really makes real estate very exciting. And I think the more that we can learn about people and the exciting businesses that there are out there, the better the industry will become.
Couldn't agree more, and thanks for having me on the podcast, Sam.